KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
Our city attorney had been taking the position with me that he kind of had final authority on all matters relating to the DOJ, and that would leave a two-person dialogue, and I don't think that's the way to achieve reform. We really do need to involve the executive branch.
Our aim with data-driven policing is to minimize the influence that unconscious bias can have on these decisions. So with this software, we can take that out of the equation.
It's unprecedented to move a team out of a market where you have fans that support the team, and when you have a commitment to build a new building. That has never happened.
That is Sacramento Mayor Kevin Johnson talking about moving the Kings following NBA Commissioner David Stern's press conference, where he said the money that was put up just wasn't quite adequate yet. Also, a couple of cuts from Mayor Mike McGinn about police reform and politics. Mike McGinn is the mayor of Seattle. He joins us, as he does every month, until the campaign really gets rolling, you know.
Oh, but, do you kick me off?
Oh, heck yes.
Oh, man, I'll miss you,
except as in terms of politics.
Except in terms of the race.
But
yeah.
I am going to start with politics today.
You go for it, man.
Because I go away, and as I leave, I'm thinking, you know, Mike McGinn's looking pretty good in the race. That's what I was thinking. We had the discussion around the Friday roundtable, and then I listened to the Friday roundtable Friday with those journalists, and they basically have written you off.
Well, you know, it's not the first time, Steve, that I've been written off, but that's okay.
That's okay? What happened?
Hey, you know, we're still doing our jobs down there at City Hall, right? We have a strong economy. Crime is down. We're making progress on broadband. We're making progress on new transit. We're making progress on educating our kids.
You keep making that, and keep we're making even, that statement.
And they're all true statements. And we plow the streets and we deal with things like May Day.
And
we're making progress on reform as well, Steve.
Here's what I hear you saying it. And I go, I hear that. I hear you. I hear the words, but all that comes through my ears are, oh, Mike McGinn, obstructionist. That's what they're going to say to you.
Well,
that's all the voters. That's what they're going
to
hear.
And here's what I'd say to you is, of course, the people running against me for office are going to claim that. But what I would ask the voters to look at is, what have we gotten done in 3 years? And you don't get things done unless you know how to get things done.
I know you have read the editorial pages. That is all like dismissed. It's all dismissed. Oh, Mike McGinn. Yeah, they got some things done. But...
Well,
he just is a litigator, and he doesn't bring the city together.
Here's the deal. I have never hesitated to bring tough issues out into the open so that they can be resolved. And that's, in fact, why we've balanced our budget year after year and ended it in the black. That's why we have a rainy day fund that at the end of 2014 will be at the highest level since before the recession. You know, there are reasons for that. Because I, as a leader, am not nervous about putting tough issues out into the public arena for people to resolve. And, you know, we could, you know, I guess I'm not like the usual politicians. I could make believe everything's fine, not raise the issues. But look where we end up with that, Steve. We end up with a maintenance backlog on our roads that's huge, right? We end up with a budget that's chronically out of balance. We end up with... taking our direction from the Seattle Times instead of taking our direction from the people.
We do take our direction from the Seattle Times. All right.
So really, in answer to that question, look at the record. Paid sick leave, rental housing inspection legislation, highest number of minority and women contracts since before I-200, doubled the families and education levy, transit master plan underway. We got broadband coming out to every neighborhood, 14 pilot neighborhoods, and if that works, we can bring it to every neighborhood. And I don't think the Seattle Times has even written a story about that broadband plan yet.
And yet everybody else is going, yeah. Mike McGinn opposed the tunnel and he lost. Now Mike McGinn's fighting over the monitor.
Well, we're not fighting over the monitor. We actually have an agreement on a monitoring plan. The issue I raised very simply is that as the chief executive of a large city, 29 agencies, 11,000 employees, $4 billion budget, every once in a while I need a lawyer. And when I do need one, it would be really good to have a lawyer who worked with us and didn't try to assume authority to himself.
All right. Well, as you know, this is not resolved, correct? This is a constitutional question that is not resolved, or a state, a city legislative question, legal question that's not resolved.
At the city, it's not resolved. I would point out that our public lands commissioner, Peter Goldmark, found himself in the same position with regard to Attorney General McKenna when the Attorney General wouldn't take an appeal when requested. And the Supreme Court then ruled that the state attorney general, you know, he has to listen to his client.
Right,
so that has been addressed in the rules. But no, it has not been resolved here at the city level.
Because as our good friends in the Seattle Times pointed out, that issue hasn't gone. The issue of the city and the language that the city attorney operates under hasn't gone before the state Supreme Court.
No, that's true. And I want to be very clear. I certainly don't, not just for reasons of politics, but for reasons of you know, getting things done. I really wish we weren't in this situation. I want to be very clear.
I know
about
you
that.
Said you regret it.
Well, I regret that we've gotten to this, that we've gotten into this position where, you know, we've got very public, you know, kind of deadlock over who has the authority to speak for the city. And I realize that Pete does have a charter role as supervisory control of litigation. But then that would, if his authority is as big as he says it is, that leaves me without my charter authority to be the mayor. So I do regret we're here, but I have reached out to Pete Holmes. And
you
we
guys
are
having a beer? You going to dinner?
Well, we've sat down many, many times to talk, and we'll
apparently
sit down
he wants to have a beer with you or schedule dinner.
You know, and I would just say to that, you know, hopefully as professionals we can figure out how to do it without the lubrication of alcohol.
Barack Obama did it.
And how's that working out for him?
All right, let's see if I can get you in trouble. One of the arguments is, well, you're also the chief law enforcement officer. Therefore, you know, maybe you should be one step removed from this DOJ mandated process.
Well, you know, the deal is we've been working on reform. I actually got into the room with the Department of Justice and negotiated that settlement agreement personally because it was important that I break the logjam that we had between the lawyers. You know, during the settlement process, what had happened was the lawyers came to a dead end. And I actually flew to D.C., met with Thomas Perez, the head of the Office of Civil Rights, and got an agreement from him that we would reopen negotiations. Everything would be on the table. And then, you know, as that process was continuing, we then got a mediator and I personally went in there and negotiated it. And it was an agreement that everyone praised. And it included something I'm very proud of because it was at my something I really wanted was a community police commission. My theory of reform here is that you need to bring everybody to the table to talk about the toughest issues. I'm bringing that up again. You know, the community police commission will have the most severe critics of the police department along with police officer and police union representatives at the same table because the point is if we can air and elevate those issues in public, maybe we can get resolution as opposed to merely leaving these issues as they've been for years where people aren't really willing to address it. So my theory of reform is you got to bring everybody to the table. And I'm going to keep doing that as mayor. I would love to get myself into a position, and I hope we can get ourselves into a position where we have the monitor and the police department in a close collaborative working relationship around reform. We've empowered the people in the police department that care about reform, and that's what I've been trying to do as an executive. You know, that's something a city attorney can't do. An executive really has to empower the reformers within the department, which I've been doing. And then we have the community police commission as well to act as a check and balance. At that point, we will have a process by which everybody has a say in how it proceeds. This is not going to happen by fiat or dictate because we're talking about changing a culture.
I want to come back to that police commission stuff in some depth in a moment. But I think I'll stick with politics for a little bit longer here.
Well, you guys all love the politics and the conflict for obvious reasons. And I really want to say this to the extent get into trouble in politics, it's because I am truly dedicated to trying to figure out the issue and elevate the issue. The political thing to do is, in fact, to smooth it over, you know, push it under the rug. Let's not worry about it.
Well, that's what they're saying you're doing now. You smoothed it over. You backed off.
Well,
you're pushing it under the rug.
We raised the issue. I actually, as a result of the back and forth, I had a very good direct conversation with the monitor about what our concerns were. We've got You know, we're rebuilding that relationship with the monitor, you know, without it having to go through the filter or too many filters, but have a direct relationship so we can actually address and resolve problems. And again, this is something I believe is important, is you have to get issues out in the open in order to resolve them and in order to then to be able to move forward.
You released the letter you sent to Pete Holmes to the public?
It was shared, yeah.
Was Pete Holmes the leak in the past from this, with issues that had been you had hoped to keep more private?
You know, it's hard to say where things happen from, but I do know this, that in numerous conversations where I was sitting down with our city attorney and city council members present, we would often get an email from the Seattle Times the next day saying confidential sources say X. So where exactly the leaks come from, I don't know. But it was always very disturbing to me that attorney-client privileged communications, you know, because when I'm sitting with the city council and the city attorney, those are privileged communications. It was always very disturbing to me that there was a reporter contacting us on a regular basis, usually within 24 hours, characterizing the conversation and oftentimes characterizing my behavior in the conversation in an inaccurate way. And this has been an ongoing issue when you can't have a conversation without fear that it will be used against you in the press.
Didn't you do the same things by sharing that scathing letter?
That was not releasing a confidential communication. It was sharing with the public what the issues had been.
What did you make of the poll that came out that said you and the undeclared candidate Ron Sims, undeclared, unannounced, as far as 9:30 this morning, are at 15% each, something
yeah.
about that?
You know, I generally don't talk. You'll excuse me. I've had 3 years now with you where I've managed to not talk about politics or my chances of winning with you, and I generally tend to avoid that. I like to talk about what we're doing and what we're going to do.
You are still going to run.
Oh, yeah. I'm in the race. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we have a lot of candidates in the race and who've run citywide before or in the case of one run countywide, in the case of another run in the 43rd, which is a big chunk of the city. Many of them have run multiple times. So it would be surprising to me if they didn't have support in the race when they start, given the fact that they've run before. But you know what? I like to say that what we have here is an explosion of democracy. And I think that's great for voters. We'll all go out in front of the voters and we'll talk about our vision of the future. And based on what I've done and what we're planning to do, I think we've got a great story to tell the public.
Yeah. Well, they say more candidates is better for you. That's what the horse jockey said.
I don't know.
Handicappers.
I don't know. I do know that, again, we have a balanced budget, rebuilt the rainy day fund, doubled the families in ed levy, transit master plan, broadband. We plow the streets and we take care of, and crime is down too. So, and we're making progress on reform. We're actually making a difference. So we're doing all those things.
Do you think crime is down because of your policies?
You know, our police force, in the midst of what has been an extraordinarily challenging time, everybody has to admit that. You know, they've been under investigation. They are actually still out there doing their jobs. We've started directed patrols, which is we take officers out of their cars and get them walking the beats where crime is most likely to occur. They've, you know, dealt with, we had, at the beginning of last year, we had something like 22 murders in the first 7 months, and they went to work on gun stings, gun enforcement, violence emphasis patrols, and we had 4 murders in the last 5 months of the year. Last 7 months of the year were 4 murders, 22 in the first 5 months. So they continue to go out there and do a good job. And let's just take a look at what happened Friday afternoon. Right. We had somebody with a gun show up and shoot an employee. Not actually, it was an employee that pulled the trigger, and the individual that was shot was the head of ARC, which is a closely affiliated organization with our Parks Department. They then went to Bitter Lake Community Center, showed the gun there when they met with people, and our Parks Department employees evacuated the place. The police department and the parks department evacuated community centers, closed them, notified the schools, got on the trails, and within 3 hours had an arrest. So they're still out there working hard, and they are, in fact, reducing crime overall. There are areas where we have to address. There are categories of crime which go up, you know, as others go down. But they keep doing their job, and they keep being very effective at it. In fact, we have one of the safest cities in the country.
All right, I will take a break with the mayor, who actually has his sleeves rolled up and is ready to take some questions from you as well. And we'll take a look at what the report that Merrick Bob has released has to say and what is happening with the police monitoring plan. That's all coming up on Weekday on KUOW Seattle.
There is a lot of information about you floating around out there on the internet and in government and business databases. Who has access to that information and what are they doing with it? We're going to find out today at noon on KUOW 94.9 Seattle.
Support for KUOW comes from the Moore Center for Eating Disorders, committed to providing compassionate and comprehensive care for adolescents and adults with eating disorders through their partial hospitalization and outpatient programs for over 20 years. More information at moorecenterclinic.com.
46 degrees in Seattle. It's mostly cloudy. There's a little bit of fog here and there. Forecast says clouds all day. Chance of rain and an afternoon high of 52.
Mike McGinn is the mayor of Seattle. He's here to talk to us this morning about what's happening in the city. Our number is 206-543-5869 if you have some questions. 1-800-289-5869. So the monitor, Merrick Bob, is actually before the city council, I believe, as we speak.
That's right. That's right.
He's talking about his monitoring plan for the first year. I just want to ask you one thing, because you said this. You said that you have restarted conversations with the monitor, but you're having conversations with the monitor, reestablishing some ideas and some trust. You can get that while I'm looking for this.
I'll do that. Okay.
All right. So, but here's the question, and it was telling to some other folks, and I wonder if this is telling me something, which is he lists all the people that he and his associates have sat down with, from the 100 community organizations to the great access they get from SPD as they work towards getting some computer access. Long paragraph on that. Then it says the monitor and the team have met with Mayor McGinn and his representatives. We also met with members of the city council, all of whom pledged their support. I read in that one sort of terse sentence some tension between you and the monitor.
We had a great conversation Friday afternoon in which and we actually have not spoken that much since he was appointed. We had a couple of meetings then, and I pledged to him then that I would be his strongest ally in city government on reform, because from the position of being the mayor, again, for all of the reasons I spoke about earlier, our ability to empower the reformers, our ability to bring in community members to interact with us, the work we're doing on safe communities, the executive branch has a lot. We have a lot of ability to work on changing culture, which is what we need to do. While at the same time, as I just did, really recognizing the hard work our police department does on our behalf every day. So I think that there's been some distance had arisen, and that was one of the reasons why it was very important to me as this thing was going on that we reconnect. So we spoke on Friday, and we actually have another meeting set up this afternoon, actually the monitor, the city attorney, me, and Chief Diaz, because the only way we're
going— Green tea, by the way.
Green tea?
If you're not going to have beer, a little green tea.
Yeah. And the real key here is that we need to work together. This is not an issue— I think some people are kind of advocating this, you know, that the job now is to kind of cram it down, you know, and force the police to change. And what we know is you really need to enlist the desire to change from the people who are doing the work themselves. And that means you have to demonstrate respect to them as well as— And by the way, on the topic of holding hard conversations, I regularly meet with groups of police officers, and I have hard conversations with them too. And they share with me their concerns, and I share with them my concerns, because you got to put it out on the table so that you can resolve it.
Like what?
Well, their concerns are generally that they're not sure that they're getting the support they need or the recognition for the types of danger they put themselves into. And they want to see that support from from the mayor, from the council, from the city attorney, from the public.
And your concerns?
I tell them they deserve it. You know, they earn it every day by putting themselves into danger. But they have to understand that there's a really serious issue of trust between them and the public, and that they can't look for that trust issue to be resolved simply by, you know, a mayor or chief or city attorney or city council member simply standing up for them. They have to go out there and help us re-earn that trust by their behavior and every interaction they have with members of the public. And they've embraced what we've called safe communities. And what we've done in safe communities is we have put together, we've reached out, we've gotten over 1,000 people so far have come in, 91 meetings. We sit down in groups of 10. We have police officer, group of community members, facilitator, to have a direct dialogue about what it is they feel to, they need to make their community safer. For some communities, they'll just say, we want more police presence, we want you to stop burglaries. For other communities, it was very touching, actually, the last meeting I was at, was a Vietnamese person saying, we come from a culture where somebody in uniform is a scary thing. You know, this is the a lot of the Vietnamese refugee community. And it's hard for us to approach a police officer. And so these are the types of issues where, and we've sat down with others who say, you know, I don't want to be scared when a police officer comes to my neighborhood because I'm fearing mistreatment. These are the types of direct dialogue that are now informing how we change our outreach practices and how we change our training practices, how we change our, you know, our policies around doing patrols in the community as well. And so, you know, backing up again, what started me on this dialogue was having an honest dialogue with our police officers about recognition of the hard work they do, but also recognition of that the problem they face isn't a PR problem. It's a real problem that they have to get out in the community and help us solve.
Well, let me follow up on that. Do you think, you said that, you know, the press loves the conflict. Do you think that the press, political opponents, or some community groups are overplaying the, or the monitor, are overplaying the conflict, the view the general milieu view of the Seattle Police Department.
It's you know, politicians, you know, will be politicians. There are people running for office. Absolutely. There are folks who want more control over what goes on. And if they can use, you know, public pressure to drive them more authority or more ability to get their way, they'll do it. I mean, that's part of the way democracy works. But my viewpoint is public safety has always been too important for politics. You know, I mean, if it's a basketball arena, I know some Sonics fans would say that's too important for politics, too. You know, but if it's a Sonics arena, you know, if it's a street paving project, that's one thing. But when we're talking about the dignity and respect our folks deserve on the street and keeping every neighborhood and every community safe from crime, we really shouldn't be doing that in this context.
Has the monitor changed the parameters of the agreement?
I think that's one of the concerns is that, and this is one of the issues that that remain important was that and had a conversation with the monitor. And on the basis of that conversation, I can represent to you that, you know, he's assured us it's a living document, it's subject to amendments, and that we're going to work closely to look at things like timelines and scope to make sure that we're focusing on the most important things first. There are concerns that the monitoring plan would call us to spend money we don't yet have or have us do things that may not be the most productive things to do. But if we can have that opportunity for direct dialogue so that we don't end up with things that are beyond the scope of the agreement, then we'll be in great shape.
The monitor released their schedule of priorities. And it seemed that you were looking at that schedule of priorities in responding. And that's why I was asking, do you think these deadlines to provide draft to monitor from SPD, reporting and investigation policy development on use of force, end of this month, and then deadline for compliance, August 31st.
Oh, under the settlement agreement.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've in fact shared, the department has developed all of the new policies called for in the settlement agreement and have shared them with the monitor. We want to get on with reviewing those policies, you know, getting input where appropriate from the Community Police Commission as well, which is subject to confirmation soon by the council, so that we can then move into training and implementation of those policies. And, you know, we'll get them done, I suppose, when we get them done. But the sooner we get them done, the sooner we can move into training and implementation.
But you don't have any problems with these dates?
Well,
supervision,
I think
span of control.
We actually spoke about those. I actually spoke about the dates. And what the monitor pointed out to me was that the deadlines that were proposed from the police department in their monitoring plan are contained as part of the monitoring plan. And as a result of that conversation, you know, what he represented to me was that he doesn't think he's that far off from where we are on those issues. So, but he does want the opportunity to, you know, take the time to get it right, I suppose, which is a reasonable concern on his part. But he also indicated that he made an appendix to the monitoring plan all of the deadlines proposed by our police department to move forward. So on the basis of that conversation, I have a, you know, level of confidence that we're going to move forward in a timely manner together on implementation of the policies.
Would that be Appendix B?
I
the
think
matrix?
So. The matrix.
Under,
yeah.
Under the –
yeah.
And
yeah.
If you go to their website, you can see all these. So is there anything here that you think is going to be problematic? One of the things the monitor talks about as critical is having not acting sergeants but trained sergeants in place who are both have authority and responsible for problems. Is there going to – and it seems that's one of the critical points that they're making.
Yeah, and I think there's agreement on that.
And the dates as well?
So I
could tell you.
You're ahead of me now on the dates.
Acting sergeant training, what is it, 9/30/2013 by deadline for delivery and deadline for compliance. You have a couple more years after that.
Yeah, no. This issue of
2014.
The issue of having permanently assigned sergeants to a squad to provide continuity of supervision is one that was raised in the settlement discussions as well, and one in which we agreed with the Department of Justice, and you'll find that contained in the settlement agreement, that we have to do work. Now, the first proposal from the Department of Justice set an arbitrary standard of one sergeant for every six squad members. And at the time in the city, we objected on that, wow, that's a really big cost, really fast. Let's instead set a process for evaluating what it should be. So with the monitoring plan is it reflects the settlements agreement that we need to work on this. And in fact, I've been having a conversation with the city budget office and the NSBD about how do we do that, get more permanent sergeants in place so you get that continuity of supervision. There's another change we made, which was we didn't have kind of a permanent assignment of police officers to sergeants. There was a little more of a rotating sergeant philosophy that we adopted. And that was something we've already eliminated and replaced it with a sergeant as a sergeant for that group to maintain continuity. It's interesting. Some of this is all a hangover. There's a couple of things that are a hangover or legacy of a time in Seattle's history when there was a fair bit of corruption, actually, in the police department. A long time ago.
You mean the rotating of sergeants?
Well, what you had was, you know, and when I say this is a legacy, part of that may have been efficiency reasons, too, that people talked about the rotating, right? You'd be more efficient to staff if you didn't always have to be permanent. But there was a period of time where when you had an officer walking a set beat and they always had the same sergeant, you could get into a situation where maybe things got a little too cozy as to how things worked with the local neighborhood. And there was a time in Seattle's history some 40 years ago, 50 years ago, when kickbacks and corruption were fairly endemic. So that was, you know, one of the things that led people away from that philosophy. This is a digression. But it's interesting because now that we're very far removed from that day, all of the information and knowledge is that you want officers who own their territory more, by their present more in it, and that they have more direct supervision from their sergeant, and that's a way in which you can make sure that you're getting the type of consistent supervision, consistent behavior, and rigor in the department that improves community trust.
You know, just a couple more questions on this, then we'll move on to other things.
Sure, so it's fascinating, isn't it? If I may, there are real issues here in how you do reform that are important to have everyone at the table.
Well, what have you learned on that issue? What have you learned about what's, you know, you look at those rubrics, you look at the things that are all being laid out here. You're not a police officer, you're the mayor.
I'm the mayor.
What have you learned about the you have Connie Rice as one of your advisors.
That's
what's
just,
the critical thing?
I was just going to raise Connie Rice. Both of us were thinking in the same direction here. You know, when we got the settlement agreement done, it was really important. In fact, before I did the settlement agreement, one of the things I did was I called up other mayors. I called up Mayor Coleman from Columbus, Ohio. I called up Mayor Landrieu from New Orleans to ask them what they were doing, get their advice. They were really helpful. And what I took away from that was, let's not try to reinvent the wheel here. So I reached out to Connie Rice, who you interviewed last week, I understand.
Marcy
spoke to her.
Connie
Rice was a lawyer who was suing LAPD around police reform. And the key message that she has shared with me and with our team is some of the things I've been trying to relay in this conversation. You're never going to solve this by getting the right ruling or getting the court to say X, Y, and Z. She ultimately was asked to do an analysis of the police department. She ended up interviewing 3,000 police officers down there and listening to them and understanding them. And the key message she brings to me is you need everyone at the table around reform, and that the settlement agreement and the monitoring plan itself are tools. But the real tool, where the rubber meets the road, so to speak, is what do you do with that? What do you do with the new climate that's been created in order to bring everyone together around change?
Well, one of the things that Marcy took away and I took away in listening to that interview was, in the end, on this agreement, City Attorney Pete Holmes isn't in charge. Mayor Mike McGinn isn't in charge. The judge is in charge.
That's right. And so this is, and I understand that, fully understand that, which is why it's important when there are genuine issues that are being raised from the executive branch, that those issues are represented fairly to the court and not put aside because our city attorney doesn't, you know, want to represent them.
What's one that you genuine issue?
And you know, at this point, we've agreed to the monitoring plan.
Yeah.
But we have, in fact,
what is that? Why do you put that caveat in there?
Well, we agreed to it, but with an understanding that we could amend it and make changes if that it's a living document that's subject to amendment. And there will be issues that come up where there will be budgetary issues, there will be public safety issues, or there will be differences of agreement on the best way to do reform. And the best way for us to resolve those issues is to have an open dialogue about those issues. And that means that there are times when the executive branch and executive branch agencies, whether it's the budget office or SPD, need to be able to present their views through our city attorney to the court. It's not to say that we, as you pointed out, we don't get our way at the end of the day, but it is important in this type of process that those views be fully and fairly represented to the court. Now, having said that, I am very hopeful that Pete Holmes and I can reach an accord on how to do that so we don't have these types of disputes.
But if you're there at the table, so what? I mean, you're going to raise your issue. He'll raise his issue. The Citizens Police Commission will raise their issue. The monitors will raise their issues.
Not in the courtroom. Only the city attorney represents us in the courtroom. When we talk to the judge. That's the issue. So that's where, again, the executive branch or the council, let's be clear, or the council or the community police commission. And, you know, and that puts Pete in a tougher spot when you have multiple clients. But we have to have a way to resolve those things internally first. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why I elevated the issue of who speaks for the city. Because if we don't address the issue of who speaks for the city, we're going to see this issue repeat each time there's a potential concern about what's being proposed. And if we don't resolve it, then we'll just be in this endless wash, rinse, repeat cycle on this issue.
You've heard the argument that who speaks for the city is that the same as who speaks for the citizens?
So, you know, boy, here we are kind of going into civics 101 here in a way. And I don't say this negatively because this is not an issue I really thought about.
You love this mayor.
Well, I didn't really think about it that much until I was mayor, right, and really go through it. But the way it works out is we have a democratically elected council, a democratically elected mayor, and a democratically elected city attorney. But the way that the city, under the charter, makes decisions is through the legislative process. So the council passes things. The executive is in charge of executing agreements and making sure all the laws are followed. And we have differences of opinions, and we have a way to resolve them. They vote. And as you well know, there's been a number of occasions where the council has voted opposite of the way I would have liked. But, you know, I never have any problem with following those following their direction, because them's the rules, and that's my job.
Our last question, then we'll be done. We'll take a break, and we'll go to these other issues. When will the Citizens Police Commission, which the monitor in his report basically says, well, we're waiting on them to be in place before we can move forward on some of these discussions. When will it be in place?
That's in the council's hands. And we worked with the council, in fact, took a lot of input from council members on the potential appointees and the slate of candidates that was put forward by my office to the city council reflects that input. You know, in terms of the breadth of the people involved and who's on it. And so that's on the council's in the council's hands now. They've got to schedule that for a vote and approval so we can get it up and running. But we got the staff ready to go.
It sounds like they should get cracking. Let's blame them.
No, I'm not blaming them. I know they have a hearing set on this issue very soon. I want to say this week. I think Wednesday they have a hearing set. I'm not exactly sure. But, you know, the timeline for approval is ultimately in their hands.
All right. Mike McGinn is the mayor. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about surveillance. We'll talk about discipline in public schools and whatever issues you might want to raise. 206-543-5869. 1-800-289-5869. You're listening to Weekday on KUOW Seattle.
Every day, KUOW brings you news and information that reflects our community and keeps you connected. But we can't do it without you. It's your financial support that makes it all possible. You may have recently received an appeal in the mail. Please mail in your gift today or give online at KUOW.org. Your support right now will help keep our upcoming spring membership drive on target so we can get you back to regular programming sooner. Thanks.
Support for KUOW comes from Nissan Leaf. The 100% electric, zero-emission 2013 Nissan Leaf has new features such as leather-appointed seating for five and never needs gas. More online at choosenissan.com.
Take a look at the weather here. It's 46 degrees in Seattle, mostly cloudy. Forecast says clouds all day with a chance of rain and an afternoon high of 52. I'm Bernard Ouellette. It's 9:43. The International Criminal Court is dropping its Crimes Against Humanity case against a former Kenyan official after a key witness admitted lying in his incriminating testimony. We'll have more on that in our 10 o'clock newscast.
Mike McGinn is the mayor of Seattle. He's taking your calls on some of the issues. Wednesday at 5:30, the council is going to discuss the appointment of the various members of the Community Police Commission. I guess that's in the council. Public Safety, Civil Rights, and Technology Committee. So after that, they'll move that out, I imagine, and vote in a timely fashion.
And it's a great list. And as I said, it has a number of the people who actually called for the DOJ investigation and who are the most severe critics of the SPD. So I'm actually really looking forward to getting these tough issues of policing out in the open. Part of the issue, too, is one of the other reasons I like it is as this came up, it became very clear to me that different groups would write to me and say the solution to police reform is this or the solution to police reform is that. And sometimes this and that were opposite each other. And the people who were pressing for their solutions were all, you know, good people who really cared. So this is an opportunity to put all these ideas in a forum in which we can get resolution about what are really the priority issues.
I'm going to switch topics.
Sure.
Do surveillance cameras belong in the public arena?
So, you know, right when you say the word surveillance, you know, you almost get the answer, which is no.
Well,
right?
Look at, I got my surveillance of my front door and I can look at what the traffic is doing.
And you make a great point there, which is that it depends who's doing the reviewing. So clearly, you know, a private business that wants to monitor its parking lot for crime can do that. And it's really valuable to the public if a crime is committed to find that tape. People want to watch their property. People want to turn on the camera and see, is the road clear that they want to drive down, or is the pass full of snow? So the issue comes when there's a sense that the police have an opportunity to review private stuff. We even see on our red light cameras, for example, privacy concerns that those images can't be used for crime fighting, which there's something down in the legislature right now which is trying to address that. What if that red light camera might have caught a car speeding away from a drive-by shooting? Should the police have the opportunity to look at that?
Should they?
I think so, actually. You know, I understand the privacy concerns, but I think when you're trying to take somebody is shooting guns out of the car window, maybe that's appropriate. So the issue, the drones clearly troubled people greatly. And I don't think it was that much about the 20-minute battery life camera-operated thing. It was, where does that door go next?
Can we not limit that?
Well,
is it a door?
That's what the public, what I really heard from the public was they didn't believe we could limit it.
And did you see the same thing with those Homeland Security cameras along the waterfront?
That's the same sentiment on those cameras. I think we'd all agree, and I think the public would agree, and others would agree, the Coast Guard, the port, emergency management, police department, fire, there's a reason to be able to see our waterways in the event of an emergency, for the same reason we want to see our streets in the case of an emergency, for emergency response. But to the extent the cameras have the ability to see anywhere else, people are deeply concerned about that. And the department has what they call a masking technology, which they put in, which can't be overridden by the supervisor, by the viewer, which will prevent that. But the public isn't buying it yet. They're not sure that that's really true. So my instruction to the police department is you have to bring this out to the public and you have to get a thorough vetting of it and, you know, deal with people's concerns. And if we can't deal with those concerns, then we're going to have to figure out what's our pathway on these cameras. Can they be put up in such a way that they can't physically look at anywhere else but the water? Because, again, I think it's important to have that type of situational awareness in an emergency. But people are very, very troubled about the privacy concerns, and I appreciate and understand that.
Well, I'm sure people see what's happening in the UK or they watch television shows where cameras solve crimes all the time, and that's their concerns.
And I think we also see, you know, kind of the post 9/11 world where, you know, I think we're seeing a backlash against that type of security state, as well as the concerns of what you see with our international policies on use of drones. All of that's feeding back to, do we trust government with cameras if they can be misused? So, you know, I would gladly, turn the cameras over to, somebody who might be trusted if that's what we would do to get the situational awareness. But we're just going to have to figure out how to get out of this murky jungle we're in right now on this issue. It would be a shame to lose the public safety benefits of observing the water. But we also can't disregard people's legitimate concerns about privacy.
All right, a couple of phone calls. Amy's in North Seattle. Hello, Amy.
Hello, how
are you? Thank you for calling. I'm very good.
Good. Hello, Mayor.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I am concerned about the amount of graffiti that I see as I'm going around town. I try to keep it down right where I'm at, and I call into the graffiti line, but it's just getting worse, it seems to me. And, you know, calling in and trying to get supplies to clean things up, I haven't really gotten a response.
Is the anti-graffiti program at the same level of funding and staffing that it was 5 years ago, Mayor?
That's a good question. Part of the challenge is, where's the graffiti? If it's on city property, we can move quickly. But even there, we don't move as quickly as I'd like to. What we know is if you can get graffiti removed on a consistent basis within 24 to 48 hours, it really deters future graffiti. And I don't think that our currently, whether it's Seattle Public Utilities or SDOT, you know, have the crews or parks have the crews to meet that standard, although we'd love to meet it. If it's on private property, it requires the private property owner to take action. We also, through Seattle Public Utilities, provide graffiti anti-graffiti supplies to business districts and groups that want to use it. So that's another thing you can do.
Right. And Amy, you were saying that's one of the things you've been working at.
I tried to call and get that. And
oh, okay.
I've gotten no response.
Let me, Amy, please send me an email at mike.mcginn@seattle.gov with your contact info. Say you spoke to me on KUOW. I'm going to get you a response today.
Thank you. And I think there are many in the neighborhoods that would be happy to step up if there was more of a, I don't know exactly what to do, but I'm sure that each neighborhood would step up to do their own policing if there was a push for that.
And I will, again, SPU does want to help people with that. So on the follow-up, if you feel like you're not, it's not merely that you're not getting a response, but I'm also going to see if there's something up that we need to be aware of so that we are getting, that we are more responsive to everybody who calls with this request.
Shoot us an email. We'll read it on the air, too, to find out what you find out, to report what you find out. Amy,
okay.
Thank you. Let me go to Stephen in Seward Park. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Mr. Mayor.
Hello.
Mayor McGinn, I'm really concerned as someone who works in Seattle Center about the traffic plan should the Sonics come back to the arena for two or three seasons. As you know, it's impossible to get in and out of there during the day and at night. What kind of preparations are you guys making for a Sonics return?
Okay, we have SDOT at the table with the Sonics folks, as well as our other departments. But there's another thing going on, which is going to make this just a little more challenging, which is Mercer West project is starting up soon. And what that is rebuilding, the biggest part of that is rebuilding the underpass under Aurora to make it six lanes instead of four lanes. And then that'll be two-way traffic through there. And at the end
to
of the,
meet with what's now been in, what is now in place
right.
already.
And at the end of the day, we'll also be able to open up a couple of other surface streets across Aurora. Theoretically, once the tunnel is done, we'll have more of the street grid completed. But we are heading into, regardless of the Sonics, we are heading into 3 years or, you know, a couple more years of tough traffic. 3 years is probably too long for the Mercer project. But this construction season, certainly, and beyond, we're also going to see Aurora more narrow as a result of that project, because that's 99 coming south, which goes over Mercer. That's a bridge. We're rebuilding the bridge. And that means that we're going to be closing some lanes of traffic. So folks will be going out. I went to a briefing yesterday where folks in the neighborhood received the briefing. There's going to be an open house on what the traffic mitigation plans are. And this will engage the dealing with issues around the Sonics as well, should the NBA Board of Governors approve the relocation and sale. But there's unquestionably going to be challenges, which is why I'm a big supporter of building more transit. We've
yeah,
got to figure
that'll
out.
That'll take time.
That'll take time, too. But
are you working with Metro right now? What's Metro doing in conjunction with the city to, you know, get more buses or whatever so
right.
people don't have to drive?
We are working with Metro right now. I don't think we have all the answers to that yet, but we're working on that. But long term, even when the Mercer construction is done, even if you know, the Sonics are ultimately not in Key Arena, but in Soto. The reality is we're adding lots of jobs in this city. Amazon's expanding. You know, we see Fremont has lots more jobs than it did before with Brooks headquarters moving there. Our manufacturing and industrial sectors are still adding jobs. Healthcare is still adding jobs. And we cannot, as a matter of physical geometry, handle all that job growth with automobiles alone. So we really do have to get, you know, very serious about what we're going to do about building transit to meet that demand for mobility.
All right. That's a whole other subject. Now I'm going to hit you with some lightning round questions.
Go ahead.
Lightning
okay.
round. First of all, since you mentioned that, apartments, these small apartments that are being built, some neighbors like it, some neighbors don't. There's hearings taking place. The city council is looking at the apartments, these very small apartment buildings that are being built. What's the city's stance?
Well, we'll find out, I suppose, from the city council.
No, what's
the city's stance?
What's your stance?
My stance is that that they do provide affordable housing. It's relative from the private sector. Without public subsidies, what we get is a fair amount of low-cost housing. But neighbors have raised concerns that they don't know the type of unit that's being put, type of building that's being put in, because it can appear from the MUP board and the notices that it might just be a six-unit townhouse, when in fact those six units are going to accommodate eight small bedrooms with a shared kitchen in each of the units. So we are going to propose changes to the rules that get at the notice requirements and the types of public engagement when it's proposed. But we've produced San Francisco, New York are trying to figure out how to make it legal to build these kind of micro apartments because of the high demand for urban living. And, you know, for the college kid, for the young person who just wants a place to stay, the city's their living room, these are really good choices. Or for the recently divorced dad who wants to still live near the single family house, right? I mean,
or mom.
Or the construction worker who just came to town seeking work, may have some money, but not enough to really afford a full-scale apartment. You know, there's a lot of reasons why I think it's appropriate to have these types of small affordable units, but we have to deal with the community's concerns about knowing what's coming in and having the opportunity to provide input about it.
Very absurd that we're talking about kinds of units that we used to call SROs that were torn down in the building boom in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, we got rid of them. And it wasn't merely that they were torn down in the 80s and 90s. Cities got rid of rooming houses and boarding houses to a great degree and single-room occupancy hotels because they were perceived to be a blight on a neighborhood and negative. And we passed a whole bunch of rules to make it illegal. It's kind of like streetcars. Now we're trying to figure out how to, it's kind of like the cop on the beat, right? All of these things that are old-fashioned are new again.
The disturbing report, a repeated report, things we know in the past about the discipline disparities in Seattle public schools. Now, you're not the head of schools, but the city does contribute to school funding. So what's the city's lever to move this to reform and not more conversation?
We've been working to help already. We have a race and social justice roundtable from our Office of Civil Rights, and this is one of the issues that they identified some time ago as a concern. So we have been working with the school district on policies to try to get at this issue. I don't think our teachers are, you're not going to convince me that our teachers are intentionally singling out folks. But the fact of the matter is the data speaks for itself on the real disparities in enforcement, you know, and who gets suspended and for how long and what effect it can have. So we need to move to different policies, and we stand ready as a partner to work with the school district on this.
I said I was beating you up earlier. We didn't say that, but, you know, we had that conversation.
I'm not sure I said that.
You did not say that.
Yeah.
You got 45 seconds.
Oh, come on. Ask another question, Steve.
All right. Well, then what is going to happen this week that I will be sorry that I didn't ask you about?
Oh,
because you'll make a headline.
God, now I've got to go check my now I got to go check my calendar.
No new Sonics rules. No new Sonics developments.
I've just been so in the moment, Steve. I just can't remember my weekly calendar.
No
right
findings
now.
On some other issue that might be arising.
I don't know. If I only have
10, 20 seconds now. We could just chat.
I do want to say. How grateful I am to, again, I said this earlier, how grateful I am to our parks employees, our fire department, our police department for their swift response on Friday. And
I'll tell you
what, appreciate that.
And you mentioned, and we note Richard MacGyver's passing, former city councilman.
And that, you know, that's a real loss. He was just such, everybody who dealt with him noted his warmth, his wit, sometimes biting wit, but also his love of the city. And it is a real loss to the city. He had a lot of people who loved him.
All right. Good. Yeah, he was a good guy. Liked talking to him, but he had his issues. Some listeners said I was beating you up. All right. Mike McGinn, we'll see you in a month, yeah?
Okay, absolutely.
Unless things explode.
We'll try to avoid that, Steve. You know, we'll just try to keep everything smoothed over. Wouldn't want anybody to think there are real problems in the city we need to deal with.
No, not at all.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a weekday.
And now, the sound of the day.
children for Seattle.
I
didn't
say that.
Sunday was uprising day for the Tibetan diaspora worldwide, commemorating the 1959 event when Tibetans rose up against the Chinese armed forces. The Dalai Lama escaped into exile. The sound here is hair clippers, as three Seattle Tibetan men had their heads shaved during Uprising Day rally at Westlake Center in downtown. Head shavings were done to dramatize solidarity with Tibetans still living in Tibet. Thanks to listener Kurt for sending in that sound. Why don't you send in yours? This is Weekday.
The alleged ringleader in a gang rape and murder case that sparked outrage across India has been found dead in his prison cell. That and more of today's news in a minute. KUOW FM Seattle, KUOW Tumwater, KQOW Bellingham, and Digital HD Services.
Support for KUOW comes from University Bookstore. Terry Brooks appears in conversation with Sean Speakman and Todd Lockwood to discuss his newest Shannara series, Bloodfire Quest, The Dark Legend.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.